Carolyn meets Robert Smith, the harbour master for Wales Next the Sea.
Robert, thank you very much for taking the time this morning to talk about Wales and its harbour, which I think are both intricately linked.
Absolutely. Without the harbour, you wouldn't have Wells as it is today. You know, Wells as a community in town has grown around the harbour. You know, it is the hub. Everybody, when they visit Wells, gravitates to the harbour. We have a beautiful town. We have some beautiful areas with some lovely old streets. We have the Butlins with all the Georgian houses around, where all the rich and people in power used to live. But in the real world, everybody comes to Wells because they gravitate to the harbour. They come to see and look and hear the way of life. The fishing boats coming and going, the birds. It is the hub.
You can. It's quite a overcast December day today, but I've only come in here in the summer. But you can really appreciate its beauty, I think, maybe more in the winter.
I honestly, yes, I totally agree with you. The change in seasons all bring different things. So naturally, the spring through to the autumn brings the tourists, and they come in massive numbers. You know, Wells, there's only about 2,500 people live here all year round. In the height of the summer, it goes up to 12,000-13,000.
Gosh.
So, but they bring something to the community that we desperately need, you know. Mm. Without them tourists, it makes you wonder where Wells would be, because predominantly a lot of the industry is gone. So yes, we have the fishing industry, we still have the harbour, we still have lots going on, but most young people have to move away unless they can fit somewhere into the tourist industry. So it's pivotal for the head of the tourist to Wells. But even this time of year, when it's, as you say, a bleak, cold day, it's something else again. You know, the birds, you can hear the birds, it's amazing. The whole buzz of the place. I've always said we have many, many Brent geese come here. They come on their flights yearly. They come here and roost for the winter. And in the evening when they fly back to roost on the marshes, it's spectacular, absolutely spectacular. The sound of them coming up above, and honestly, it's amazing. And I always say to people, the day I stop looking up and watching them fly over at night is the day it means I have to finish. Because I've been here 32 years and I still stand in awe of them as they fly over. The sound is amazing. Thousands upon thousands of them. All flying, not running into each other, not flying into each other. They're in these big, great skeins of Vs. Normally the oldest bird is at the front. They will fly. Then eventually that will drop back and another one will take its place. So they have a rest. They're all slipstreaming. It's an amazing sight and sound.
Do you have any environmental remit as harbour master?
Absolutely. I will be truthful and I don't want to upset anyone, but it's a nightmare. The environmental side, trying to fit everything in. You know, as I said, we have 12,000-13,000 visitors and they all want to go out on the water and on the marshes and on the beach and everything else. And we do live in a very, very special place. You know, it's a European site, it's a Ramsar site, it's a triple SR site. I could go on all morning telling you all the different designations it's got. But people still have to live and work here. Mm-hmm. And we have to manage the two. We have to manage all the visitors coming and we have to manage the environment they're coming into as well. But it is a very special place. And I don't think we do too bad a job of doing both, because the attraction of Wells is the bit that's unspoiled and we mustn't lose that. It's a little bit like stepping back in time.
Mm. But you've also been troubled by flooding as well, haven't you?
Flooding is probably the biggest challenge we have. Or we can call it flooding, or you can call it global warming, or you can call it sea level rise. But that is probably our biggest challenge for the future. As I said to you earlier, I've been here 33 years, and I can see it changing year on year on year. How? Because in the winter, years ago, we used to have the water come across the quayside to the main road maybe once, twice every 3-5 years. Now we probably get it across the quayside to the road 3 to 5 times a year.
Gosh.
So you can see that there's something changing, that there is sea level rise. There's more water coming in than ever before. What's causing that? People better and more experienced than me will tell you that. But something is changing. Something is happening. So the biggest challenge is, what do we do about that? In 2013, every single building on Wells Front, from the West Gate to the East End, where the fishermen sheds are, every single building flooded in 2013. Normally we have big, strong northerly winds and gales and everything. In 2013, the wind was in the southwest, and it still flooded. So we had to look at it completely different. Everything we had learned before, we had to change our way of thinking. So what do we do for the future? We looked at many schemes to see if we could release the water. So when the water get to a certain point, we open up pulling a plug in a plug hole, open up a valve, if you like, and letting the water go somewhere else. Now, it sounds quite complicated, but it's quite simple, because in the 900s, Wells Harbour wasn't where it is today. It was the south side of the town, where we're now the north side of the town, and the water used to go round behind the town.
Mm-hmm.
And they built lots of embankments to stop the water going round the town, to get farmland, to have more farmland. And the harbour was built where it is today. So one of the ideas is, well, maybe we should let the water go back to where it used to. Now, naturally, lots of people are concerned about that, because there's now communities and houses and businesses. But we could do it in such a way where we could build new sea walls to stop any of the town being flooded, but release some of the water elsewhere. So why do we think that would work? In 1978, we had a big flood, and a big ship got lifted onto the quayside. And as the flood was happening, all of buildings on the quayside were being flooded, and all of a sudden, true as I sit here, the water just went back like someone had pulled the plug and started going back before high water. It left a big ship, massive 400 ton ship, sitting on the quayside, that had been swept up onto the quayside during the flood, and when the water went back so fast, it just put it down on the quayside and left it behind. And what had happened, a lot of the embankments they had built in the 1700s and 1800s had broken, and the water had rushed through and had gone back to the old historic places of the harbour, which had released the pressure on the front. So you'd think to yourself, well, maybe if we could try and do that, but we'd try and do it how we want to do it, by having floodgates and open the floodgates at certain times, we could maybe release the pressure on the front of the town and all the flooding. But when we've done all our modelling, unfortunately, for that to work, we'd have to do it after the building's already flooded. Now, it sounds, why would I say that? Because if we open them too early and all the water goes through into the old historic parts of the harbour, if we've done it early, there's more North Sea, we'll just fill it up quickly, quick as anything, behind.
So it brings more force.
Exactly. So it's time critical. And the time to do it, for it to work at its maximum, is too late. The buildings are already flooded. Because if you do it too early, you still got, say, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour for the water to fill up again. If you do it 3 minutes before high water, the buildings are already full. So unfortunately, even though we thought we was onto a good idea, it doesn't really work.
So it's not really working with nature, it's working against it, or is that not?
It is, but you can't work against nature, because nature will always win.
Mm.
I've seen that all the time around the harbour. Nature can do amazing things overnight that we can't do.
Mm.
So I think for Wells, where the harbour is today, or where all the front is and all the shops and businesses, we are where we are. And I think we have to accept that there's going to be more flooding in the future. So whether we could put walls or something in to stop, I don't really think you can, because it would take away the very attraction of why people come here. So it's a challenge, but we're still looking at it.
What are there any other options on the table?
No, to be truthful, the other option would be to have big glass barriers. We already have lots of glass barriers now on top of small walls with glass barriers, so you can look through and still see the amazing marshes and everything else. But even people are nervous about that, because it's change. And the biggest thing I've learned in 33 years of working in Wells Harbour, people do not like change. Lots of people are very frightened of change. And I can understand why. We live in a very special place. But we have to have change. Change is happening all the time. It's how the change is done, and it's who the change is done by. So I think all change is not bad, but we do need to move with the times.
So you have access to really detailed archives from your forebears. Do you allow that or to inform the decisions and plans you made? Are they helpful for that?
We do have lots of archives. The archives have been accumulated over many, many years. The commissioners who I work for have been formed since 1663. So next year, 2023, is our 360th anniversary. And during that time, we've accumulated lots of records. Lots of records have been lost as well. But do I let that... Do I go back into the archives? Oh, consistently. I've learned so much by reading the archives, how they've done things before. And I will say, and openly, even though we live in this modern age, I believe we're still 150 years behind what they were doing before. What the commissioners used to do before, why they used to survey the harbour, why they used to understand the tidal flow and what would happen, was far better documented than what we do today. So we have all the electronics and all the technology we have today. I still think we're playing catch-up. Now, a lot of people would be surprised or probably not believe that. But I can show people examples how far we're behind, how they knew. For example, the commissioners, once a year, and the commissioners are a body of people from the community who oversee what the harbour masters does. So they're like our bosses. They're all volunteers. So commissioners years ago, it's say in the 1700s, there would be 30 commissioners. So you would have a board of 30 people to report to. Once a year, they used to go out into the harbour with the harbour master, and they'd all have a flag, just a flag, a piece of paper, and a watch. And the harbour master used to stand on the quayside after he'd put all the commissioners all over the harbour in different places, several miles apart. So the two commissioners would go to different points all over the harbour. He would be doing this like 3 hours before high water. He would start taking them out in the boat and putting them on the marshes and putting them on the high points and all over the place. So many of them he couldn't even see. Now in the 1700s, he couldn't communicate with them. He didn't have a radio or a mobile phone. All he had was his flag. As it approached high water, just at high water, he would raise his flag on the quayside. And the closest person to him, maybe, I don't know, 800 metres away, would raise his flag.
So they were in boats?
They were on the marshes all over the... He'd literally put them on top of them in different high places all over the harbour, in piers of two. So he'd raise his flag, and then the next one would raise his flag, and the next one would raise his flag. And by doing that, very quickly, in seconds, all over the harbour, the flags would be raised, because each one could see. Even though the harbour master couldn't see them, they could see each other as they got around. And once he raised his flag, one of the two would take a measurement of the depth of water where they were. And one of the two would write down what direction the water was going and how fast they felt it was going in knots. And he did that then for every 15 minutes until 2 hours after high water. So every 15 minutes he'd raise his flag again, he would take his depth at the quayside, and everybody else would take their depths. Then they'd bring all their information back ashore and he'd collate it. So he'd say, at 8:10, I had 11 foot 6. And number one, which was the name of a place wherever they might have been, because it was, every part of the harbour has got different names.
Mm-hmm.
The most amazing names as well, you know, all for different areas. We've got every creek, every corner, every tuft of grass nearly has got a name, which is fascinating on its own. So he'd write down the name of where they were, and he would write down what they had put. So if he had 12 foot 6 at 8:10 and the water was going to the east, the first person would have wrote what he had and the second person. And he'd collate it. Then what they did it a year later on the same date, on the same size tide, and a year after that, and a year after that. And we have all these records year on. So what you could then soon do is look at it and think, okay, I had 12 foot 6 there 3 years ago. Today, I've only got 9 foot 6. So they'd know something was changing, then they'd have to work out what was changing.
So you could respond to changes much faster.
Exactly.
Have you ever tried this yourself?
No, I haven't. I don't, where them days, there was about 30 harbour commissioners. I only have 10 now.
Right.
So my 10 commissioners come from the local community, or mainly from the local
community. You could find some local volunteers.
I think you could, but people would say, why are you doing that, Robert? You know, you've got all this electronics. You can go along with your boat and it tells you the depth within seconds. Why do you need all this? So it's a bit, people would think antiquated. I think it's amazing. Because I haven't got something electronically telling me. I've actually recorded it myself.